I mean, you all heard us if you have been listening to the podcast after GDC this past year, mm-hmm. where we were completely freaked out by how by the nightmare landscape that indie game development has become.
Yeah, I like the metaphor of, you know, we launched Crash Hands, we're like, great, and then we like went back into our cave and we just start tinking around. Mm-hmm. And like meanwhile, outside the whole world is on fire. The whole world is on fire, you know. And then 3 years later we come out and we're like, hey, oh God. Scotch. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 223 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam and I'm a meat automaton.
I'm Sam and I'm the RT.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is September 16, 2019. Before we get started, we have a warning. There's going to be swears. If you don't like them, then don't.
Then continue not liking them or... Don't.
Yeah, you just do your own thing. You know? Okay. But just know that you're going to run into them kind of everywhere. Yeah. So we got them in here. They're out there.
They're in the wild.
They're just out there. We'd also like to thank our supporters over at moneygrab.bscotch.net for letting us grab their money.
Just all the money.
We got an anonymous tip this time around. No message either. Just some secret ghost person just dunked a wad of cash.
Just giving the gift of cash to us.
And then just walked away.
What a noble soul.
Yeah.
And we'd also like to thank our recurring supporters who help us keep our mics on week after week. Let's talk about life. We saw a Cardinals game.
Cardinals familiar.
Is a baseball team.
Yes.
It's the baseball team.
It's not a bunch of birds, but that would also be amazing to watch. The Cardinals are the St. Louis baseball team. They've won the World
the Fortnite World Cup.
Yes. Whatever the word is. I can't remember what it is. The World Championship for baseball. World Series. But it's really funny because they call it World Series, but it's actually just the U.S., right?
It's kind of like Miss Universe.
Yep.
You know?
It's a little presumptuous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's possible. It's statistically unlikely.
Yeah. So it's the same situation there. And they're really good, which is, you know, good. But we showed up.
I heard they weren't. This weekend.
Well, they did lose this weekend, which was interesting. But we show up to a game. We roll up. We got our seats. We get some hot dogs, which were frankly just poorly advertised. Misadvertised is what I would actually say, because the picture on the little touch screen where you choose your hot dogs was like a beefy, just like a dope looking,
just
delicious,
a big.
Like what your mind imagines a ballpark Frank sort of situation would be.
But it was just a shriveled nightmare when it came out?
It came out and it was, I swear, half as wide as the picture. And then the bun was sort of like creased around it like a wallet.
It was effectively a smoky wrapped in a tiny crepe.
Yes.
Maybe just start a class action suit going. You know, a lot of people go to those games.
It's crazy.
It's clearly false advertising.
But the best part though is that they have you know your traditional ketchup and mustard pumps, and then they had a relish pump.
He just blasts that relish.
Well, the best part is it actually blasts it because it can't. It's relish.
It's going to get kind of plugged.
I went over there and I pumped it like twice, and then like this little spurt of just sort of pickle juice shot out, and I was like, well, where's the stuff?
Stuck
and then it hit one more time, and it was like, pah! just shot out this asteroid of destructive relish.
A pickle asteroid.
Yeah, it was incredible. But I had a thought while we were watching baseball, which was whoever designed this didn't design it for people to watch.
No.
Because
I think that's true of all sports.
No, it's not. Because if you think about some of the most fun sports to watch, I think about hockey as being, frankly, one of the most fun sports to watch. And the reason is because the ball is in play all of the time.
Mm-hmm. Or soccer.
Right. Or soccer. Yeah. So these games were actually – things are happening literally all the time.
So in football, things are not happening
exactly.
most of the time.
So football is sort of sliding toward baseball in terms of the amount of time that basically the ball is in play. And then as you get to baseball, the ball is in play for about like 3 to 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like every
and it's
so
very
often.
Small. And it's moving real fast.
Uh-huh. And it's very sporadic. The nice thing about football is you can count on when it's going to be going into play, right? Because it's like they just go down to like a 20-second maximum between plays. But in baseball, like the pitcher could just literally strike. The most boring but also somehow most exciting thing would be if the pitcher on your team struck out everybody for the entire game.
Yeah. So there's literally nothing
happens. Literally nothing happens. And so if you think about this from a game design standpoint.
The best case scenario is nothing happens.
Yeah. And so we're watching this and I was just trying to figure out in my mind as just a fun exercise, how would you just twist baseball a little bit to make it so that the ball is somehow always in play and therefore much
more. So now you make a new league called X Baseball.
Exactly, which is kind of
what's the league. Baseball league called?
Major League Baseball.
Yeah, so MLB, XLB. Just like we had the XFL.
Extra large ball. And then you get a dodgeball.
No, no. But it's got to be hard still.
You want it to hurt?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So we need that.
Yeah, so somewhere between like a soccer ball and a softball.
And then everybody at every position has a bat.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And you know gloves. It's just bats. And so your job is that you have to hit the ball back at other people.
Oh.
Right? And then if you hit the person, that's how they get out.
And then it's the last man standing.
It's the last man. So
somebody will hit the ball. They still have their bat. And then they're running to the base. And then somebody in the outfield, for example, has to then hit the ball again back toward first base.
Yeah.
And then
The first base person has to fine-tune it by hitting it again right into the person who originally hit it.
It's essentially a dodgeball. I assume these bats are maybe sort of like wiffle bats because they're going to be swinging them around a lot.
Sounds kind of like lacrosse at this point. A little more like that, you know.
There's no nets, though.
So yeah.
It's totally different.
So the thing is, there are a lot of ways I could figure out for once the ball is hit for sort of keeping it, you know, keeping it out there for a while. But as far as like how to handle the whole hitting of the ball in the first place, I couldn't figure
out. Easy. Get rid of pitchers. There's a machine that just shoots the ball always in the same consistency. Boom.
Should there be home runs? Because home runs are super exciting, but also incredibly boring. Right? So it's that's the weird thing about baseball. It's like everything that's super exciting is also very boring on like
Okay. You've got a machine in the middle on the pitcher's mound.
Yeah.
It blasts the ball upward. It's basically a randomly directed pop fly.
Okay.
Okay. You don't know where the fuck that thing is going. And then you've got four people waiting on home plate. Okay.
Okay.
So they're in a line. This is like a relay, basically. Yeah. So they're in a line, ready to go. The ball gets hit up. First person starts running around, okay? And then the team that's in the outfield and in the infield, I guess the defending team. Is that the defending team?
Yeah.
Yeah. They now have to wiffle slap this ball and try to hit the runner, okay? So this person has to run around all four bases and get in. If they get in, then the next person gets to go.
So you got
to
get all four of your people in without getting tagged?
Yes. Yeah.
But the tagging is happening via bat.
Via hitting the ball.
With the bat.
With the bat to try to hit the people.
So we should. What could go wrong?
So we should make this as so there's that video game, that golf game where you just throw yourself.
Yes.
You
know?
Yes.
So we should make a video game called Actually Fun Baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could just call it Regular Baseball.
Or Regular Baseball.
Totally. We're gonna subvert the whole sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're gonna just take over. This is true, real baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds good. Let's do it.
That would be a good jam game.
That would be.
To practice our 3D game jamming.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. I assume this is online multiplayer.
Yeah, obviously. Has to be,
Let's talk about Shenanicon.
Yeah.
It's coming. September 28th.
One and one half weeks.
Yeah. 1 to 5 p.m. here in St. Louis. This is our annual fan convention. Mm-hmm. And you can come hang out with us. It's pretty small still. So this is one of those, like, you actually get to spend some time with us and the rest of the crew at the studio, see Scuffle Buddies, which was our 6-month in development project that ended up being canceled for Levelhead.
It's one of those ones where you, as you build it, you start just seeing just how big it is, and you just go, oh no,
yeah, you realize you have made a mistake.
Yeah, so we're gonna have some things to say about that. We've never shown it to anybody, and we'll probably never see the light of day ever again. And so this is kind of like just a cool peek behind the curtain and see just what kinds of things happen here. And we can also talk about maybe what the future of some of the things from Scuffle Buddies will be. And then we also have, what do we have? We have a live podcast episode.
Mm-hmm. We've got a Levelhead competition, a little play action in there, which would be fun.
Yes. So lots of stuff. And then afterwards.
Demonstrations. It's just meeting and greeting.
Yeah. You know?
So just chatting, hanging out with us, hanging out with fellow what do we call them? Shenanites? B-Scotcheroonies. Mm-hmm.
B-Scotcheroonies, Shenanites.
Scotcheroos. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then afterwards, we'll just go hang out at the Scottish Arms nearby and just chill. Yeah. So if that sounds like your thing, which of course it is, then just go to meet.bscotch.net, mm-hmm. grab your tickets. And it is a limited capacity thing. And we also know that as, because of how things went last year, you know, a lot of people just kind of wait until before to get your ticket. Just be aware that it is limited. So don't bank on
that.
Don't
wait too long.
And then also, we were at Pixel Pop Festival this past weekend, which was it's a gaming convention here in St. Louis. It's kind of a hybrid for developers and players. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different than something like PAX, which is very player focused, and also different than something like GDC, which is very developer focused. This is somewhere in the
mid ground. So as you walk in, there's just tons of demo stations with people with their games showing off, which is a lot of fun. And then there's a full schedule of talks and stuff like that. And so we rolled in on Saturday afternoon and just sort of did our rounds at the demo tables. Yeah, met everybody and said,
"Hey." I tried to talk to everybody. I missed a few stations because they were occupied, but I tried to talk to everybody as I walked by, which was actually quite fun and surprisingly didn't take that long.
It was a couple hours.
Yeah, it was about a couple hours, mm-hmm. and I talked to literally everybody who was showing a game, mm-hmm. Which was pretty neat.
Yep. One thing I learned was that every single game at Pixel Pop is coming out on Steam.
Yep. So. and, yes. I think almost none of them know what they're in for, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a bloodbath out there. And actually, Valve just announced on Thursday that they're changing the algorithm again.
Yeah. The outcome is supposed to be that people are actually going to see more indie titles.
That is what it's supposed
according, to be. According to Steam,
yeah, I would say. Essentially, the problem was that it was biasing too much. Whenever you saw, more games like this, it was biasing those really hard toward games that were already at the top of the charts, mm-hmm. that weren't necessarily like the game you were looking at. They just were popular. Yeah. And so
And apparently people had been actually complaining to Steam and being like, I'm just seeing – this has been my experience also, is mm-hmm. I just see the same fucking games day all in and day out, and they're all games that I don't want. Otherwise, I would have
– You would have looked at them already,
So I think they're much needed tweaks, and they say in their experiments that it increased engagement and increased purchasing rates. So
yeah, the best part was as soon as they put the algorithm in place. So I'm part of a marketer's sort of like secret group where basically some people are sharing their numbers and what was happening, and it actually did not appear to be going well for most people in terms of what was happening.
Based on declines.
Yeah, a lot of people saw declines.
Yeah, and we don't know what's happening yet, I don't think.
I haven't looked at it from over the weekend, so who knows? But it was fine. It was fine on Friday, whatever that means. But
if we're just being honest here, the tail is so low right now, we'd barely even notice if it went lower.
So, it's hard to scrape.
And we also might not notice if it went higher either, depending. Yeah.
It would have to get a lot – even because if it got twice as high, it would just – like you couldn't tell. Yeah.
So we'll be curious to see what actually happens with it. I know that there's always the publicly stated intent behind it, but this was also the intent behind the last one, if you recall.
Was it? I don't remember.
It was. The last change was like, oh, we're going to like bring more games to more people.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, but just that Valve has this sort of unwinnable situation.
Yeah, it's just going to be rough.
Where games are coming into the platform at a rate far higher than players are coming into this. And actually, probably the number of players on Steam is, I assume, tapered quite a lot.
Well, and they're trying, and most of them are not good games, right? And so they're not curated by Steam by humans, which means which means they have to be algorithmically their goodness has to be algorithmically determined. And the more bad games that Steam shows to users, the less a user is going to trust Steam, and the fewer the games are going to buy. And so
but they have to show a bad game to somebody
to find out if it's good or not.
To determine how good it is.
And so it's actually all over. And you can see why as more and more games have been allowed to go on the platform, as they've just taken the gates off, that the outcome has been that they rely on external traffic. Mm-hmm. Right? Because the one thing that they basically can say, okay, well, if we don't have to show this to people and risk showing a bad game to one of our users – but we can see that traffic is coming into this game from somewhere. We didn't have to do it, but like for some reason people are into this game, then that's some evidence that people want this. So now we can show it to people, right? Which seems to kind of be the model they've landed on. And mm-hmm. So in the past, it was the case that you could use Steam as your discovery engine where you could put your game on there and then people would discover it because it was on there, and they would, guarantee some number of views and all that kind of stuff. And now it seems like
– don't count on it.
Yeah. Now it seems like it's just a place where you sell your game.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to make a prediction.
What's your prediction?
Sometime in the next couple of years.
We've got Stradamus.
Sometime in the next couple of years, we're going to see a new system in Steam, which is essentially a return to the old system.
Yeah, curated selection.
Which old system? Curated or green light?
Probably something closer to the curated system, I would think. Yeah. Where essentially you've got now a double, like a stratified two-tier store, where anybody can sell their game on Steam, and that's true. You just pay your money, and that you're technically selling your game on Steam. But there's probably going to be a curated section, which will be a return to the old style, which is Valve themselves having a team of people looking at stuff and saying, these are good games. You can trust them. We've vetted them. They're
Steam selects.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Xbox did this. ID at Xbox did this a few years ago. I don't know if they're still doing it or not, but
Well, they've got a stratified
system where you have like the games that you just put on there, right? And then you have, if you actually go through Xbox and have people over there and you go through that process and they vet you and and those were in two tiers and they were in separate places in the store. And my understanding, and this was a couple of years ago back when maybe they were just experimenting with this or planning to do it. I don't even know if they did, but my understanding of it was that the expectation was basically that if you weren't in that selected tier, then like nobody's going to go to that part. So they wanted to be able to say, oh yeah, anybody can put their game on Xbox.
But they also wanted the platform to be useful for players.
Exactly, right? But they didn't want to deal with the consequences of that. And so they used that two tier system.
So I can almost guarantee that this would have to happen in the long term.
Well, and you can actually kind of think about this. So, it's almost like Greenlight, right, if you have a two-tiered system, because you just let games in, and then if a game turns out to be somewhat successful because it has external traffic or because it's a sleeper hit that people somehow found or whatever, then you could bump it into that select tier, right? So it can still kind of work in that way where things wouldn't have to be in one or the other. But yeah, it is going to change –
Something's got to give. So we need to talk about – well, I also want to give a shout-out to the Two Scoop Games people.
Yes.
So they came and showed their game at Pixel Pop, and they had sent us a podcast question asking about the best ice cream in St. Louis, which is Clementine's.
Of course.
And they, in fact, went there, got their Clementine's, and then went to show Pixel Pop.
Did they agree that it was best?
They said it was fantastic, and of course
– But the best –
Oh, I don't know. I didn't. Okay. I honestly, I think it's unfair to judge ice creams like that because they're all equally amazing. You know,
they're definitely not all equally amazing, but they are all.
They
amazing.
Are all ice cream.
They're all ice cream, and at that point, you've already passed
the bar. It's fine.
And so of course they then demoed it. Pixel Pop, fully rejuvenated, full of ice cream.
The game was good.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah,
very fun.
So just shout out to those guys. And also now we need to talk about Subscription-geddon 2019. Mm-hmm. Okay. So three big news items all relating to game subscriptions in the past week. First one is
the most
our own,
pertinent to us,
which is Crashlands is on mobile going to the PlayOn subscription service, which is by a company called Bending Spoons. And they've got tons of other big apps that they've been working on. And they've done quite well for themselves across their various things. So we ended up starting talking with them a few months ago, actually. And we saw what they were putting together with their subscription service. We started talking to them. We liked the cut of their jib. We've been wanting to do some experiments with subscription stuff generally, and we were kind of always open to the idea if the right sort of a deal presented itself, and it did.
Yeah.
So the idea there is Crashlands is going to be switching to this free-to-try model where people can play the game. This is just for the mobile version, and actually just iOS for now and then later Android, we think. So people can try the game for some amount of time, and then they can – either do a free trial or they can subscribe to this subscription service. So then they get Crashlands plus
a bajillion
all these other games as well.
I don't think we know other games in the service, right? We just know there are other games.
There are other games, yeah. And so they're still building up the portfolio as well, and they're just sort of like starting to get the thing up off the ground.
Yeah, because I think on iOS it is soft launched. Right. I guess like quietly launched or something. Like it does exist.
Yeah, they're still building it up right
now.
So
yeah, and importantly, if you already bought Crashlands, it's fine.
Yeah, if you already bought Crashlands,
this means nothing.
Then you get to just keep it and you don't need to sign up or do anything.
Nothing happens. Yeah. You will see a minor change to your UI, which is a play on button will appear on the main menu that you could use but don't need to.
Yep. Yeah.
And the Bscotch ID sign in button will now be on the saves page instead of on the main menu.
Yeah, and this was something that we really pressed hard for, and we felt was really important. The idea that if you bought the game, then it's still yours, and that shouldn't affect you at all. So that's happening, and we have no idea what's going to happen with that.
No, but the thing that's super exciting about it is that we get to basically experiment with the subscription model in a very light way with a product that's already sort of at the end of its general life cycle. I mean, Crashlands is approaching 4 years old. It's a full-blown toddler at this point. And you don't get many opportunities oftentimes in the you know, far, far reaches of a game's lifespan to do something interesting that actually gives you some new info. And I think this is something that's been kind of surprising to us, is just seeing how long these tales can go. If your game is very good and well regarded.
And also how many business opportunities over time, even over a long time, because PlayOn approached us and we're like, hey, we're making the service. We would like to put Crashlands in it. And, you know, we're sitting here looking at, like, we've been over here just kind of sweating bullets because money's
going to run out.
At some point. And we got this new game we're trying to get out. And as you've all heard us talk about on the podcast, the landscape's looking real rough. And so then they come in and they were like, so we want to try this thing and we'll just kind of solve some of your money problems if you opt in to doing this, right? Which, you know, brings us back to this whole discussion about Epic and their exclusivity deals and so on. And the fact that in the modern landscape, you got to be willing to entertain the idea of some stuff that might make you like, because we turned over the keys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We literally handed over Crashlands on both platforms now,
or both
platforms.
It's gone from like Butterscotch.
It's not in our portfolio.
Yeah, when we go,
we have no control over it.
We go into our developer backend on iTunes or whatever.
Crashlands is not there.
Mm-hmm. It's and of course we still have the source code. It's still our game, and we're still going to be fixing stuff. But we just then hand it over to them.
But we don't have the rights to how it is managed on mobile anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Just period. Right. We of course in our contract we have certain things that they are not allowed to do and so on. But it's just it effectively is not our game.
Yeah. So of course that's a little exciting.
Yeah.
As a company.
Yeah. And we had to think about that very hard. And they were very fair with the terms, with the contract. They've been great to work with. But it was one of those things that we had to really dig deep and ask the question, what is the value of quote unquote independence, right? Where we don't want anybody to own our stuff, and we want to have complete control over everything. And the fact is you gotta be able to give some of it up.
Well, and you have to recognize the reality, which is you aren't independent. I mean,
no, you're not.
It was always the case that we were completely dependent on Apple and Google, given to us by Apple and all that stuff. It was always at the end of the day somebody else's decision what happened with Crashlands.
Yeah, right. We got to kind of sort of trick ourselves into thinking we had more control than we did.
All we had to ability to do is patch it. That's all we can do.
All store ownership gives you, really.
Yeah,
right?
And so that's, I mean, literally, nothing has changed in that regard.
No, because we still patch it. Well, like, so yeah, and just to make it clear what's going to happen, if we make any changes to Crashlands, make any updates, do anything, those are still going to go to the PlayOn version. Beastcatcher D is still in there, so your progress is still going to carry over. Nothing has changed about your gameplay experience. The only change, if you don't own it already on mobile, is that to play it for the full duration of the time, you'll be in the subscription service.
Yeah.
But everything else about it is just the same.
Yep.
Yeah. So, I'm really excited about it because I think it's a big shift. It's been a big shift mentally for our studio, is actually the big part of it.
A year ago, we wouldn't have done this.
No, 100%. And I think it's been very exciting because to me, it's sort of like Butterscotch is open for business sort of a thing
to entertain actual business deals.
Yeah. Well, and there were, I mean, we, and we had, and
we've had a couple of
them. Yeah. We won't talk about details, but we had a proposition a year ago last summer that we just said no to out of hand.
Yep.
That had we said yes to at the time would have completely, like where we are today would be completely different.
Yep.
And not only in good ways, right? So there would be some negatives as well, of course, because there always are. But on the whole, our money anxiety in particular would basically just be gone, right? And at the time, we just said no out of hand. Before we even like talked about what the deal could look like, we were just like, no, because it came with strings that we just on principle would just said no to. And so then after you all heard us, if you have been listening to the podcast after GDC this past year, where we were completely freaked out by the nightmare landscape that indie game development has become.
I like the metaphor of, we launched Crashlands, we're like, great. And then we like went back into our cave and we just start tinking around. Mm-hmm. And like, meanwhile, outside the whole world is on fire. The whole world is on fire. And then 3 years later, we come out and we're like, hey, oh God, what happened?
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. So we decided that was, but we've prided ourselves this whole time on our adaptability from the making game standpoint, where we could say, we can make a change any moment. We want to have the game in a place where if a deal comes along, we can, make that work. But we haven't really treated our business in that way,
correct?
In terms of recognizing business opportunities and being able to adapt to those circumstances. And so it wasn't until GDC kind of pulled the, you know, the wool off of our eyes, whatever that expression means, and we realized actually this is something we need to pay attention to if we want to survive as a company.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that's crazy. That's happening. And
yeah. It's very scary.
Yeah. It's very scary. And, I'm very excited though.
And of course, you know, this is also one of those things where this is now not just us. This is us working with another company. And so there's going to be stuff that happens with this that we're just not going to be able to talk about.
Yeah.
But we will try to be as transparent about it as is possible.
Yeah. And I think I will say, if you find yourself with the opportunity to do something like this, have a real lawyer involved.
Yeah.
One who you trust.
Very helpful.
Because the amount of back and forth and negotiation required we redlined easily, or not, I guess redlined or provided suggestions for easily half of the contract in terms of like lines, you know?
And and these are people who are coming at it in very good faith.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the funny part.
Yeah, we were coming at good faith. They were coming at good faith. And we still, because you have to get every, and even still at the very end of the day, there are parts of that contract where I look at it, I'm like, if they decide to be dicks later, this could be a problem.
Yeah, but, I mean, we had a really good feeling about them as we were talking to them. So we're not really concerned about it. But, yeah, and of course, at a certain point, there's also these hilarious times, and this is true of any business deal that you do. At a certain point, you basically just send one lawyer at the other lawyer.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so like, that's what we did.
So like at a certain point, the companies sort of like step out of the discussion, and the lawyers just start like duking it out about various like jurisdictions and warranties.
Well,
and
it's weird too, because this is actually, because this company is based in Italy, and so now we also had sort of country dependent issues that had to be dealt with, and so there was this one like really weird line that they just had to include. By Italian law, which was like, it was this really weird thing where basically it was like, because we signed the thing, right? And underneath that, there's a section that basically says, we agree to specifically, and then like it just outlines some of the numbers. Like, because of course the contract is a bunch of bullet, or, you know, a bunch of
sections.
Numeric sections, right? And it just lists a specific subset of them, and then you sign it again.
Yeah, and we were like,
we just agreed to all of it. Why are we now agreeing to a subset of it? Because it's like according to, you know, Italian, blah, blah, some code, whatever. We agree again, I guess.
This was disconcerting because in American legal interpretation, whenever you list something, the list is thought to be exhaustive.
Yeah.
Meaning if you say like, I agree to A, B, and F, then what that means is you don't agree to any of the other things, right? Yep. And this is not true elsewhere necessarily, how things are interpreted. And so there was definitely some weird stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's all, these things are very weird.
And then you bring GDPR into it. And then, because ours is X-ray because we got B-Sketch ID in there. So like, so then the question was who owns all the data, right?
Yeah.
And like, what is the data even? And then how does privacy apply? Because now they have their own system where, of course, they're doing subscriber stuff and they have some information about people involved now. And then we have B-Sketch ID because we're not dealing with payments at all, but we're dealing with B-Sketch ID. So we have GDPR Save stuff we have data. To deal with. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, you know, who's liable for GDPR compliance issues now?
Which is really the key issue.
Yeah, is liability.
It's not even necessarily like who owns stuff, but it's more like who's going to get
– who gets in trouble?
Who gets in trouble if shit goes wrong?
Yeah. So it was very educational, very interesting.
It was interesting. It did take a lot. It took a lot of
work. Yeah, that's the important point is it took us and our legal team and them and their legal team all coming to the table in good faith with a good – deal kind of out of the gate. It still took us
4 months.
I think 2 months of actual negotiating and sending contracts back and forth to get that all worked out.
I heard some really good advice when we were at PAX Dev. They're talking about business deals, and they said you should count on any business deal that hasn't been completed yet having a 50% fail rate.
Yeah.
Until money has actually changed hands, there's a 50% fail rate. Just so you're never super sold on it. And always recognize too that they take at least 4 to 6 months.
Yeah.
Which means this is where the pinch comes, right? Because if you're an indie studio and you're like, say you're bootstrapping or you're just running out of cash, and then you come across a deal, you still have to survive.
You just have to survive long enough to
through
get the
contract.
Yeah.
And then 50% of the time might just fall through.
Yep. So this is why you see stuff like Telltale like implode, right? Where they were waiting on a deal to come through. Seemed like it was going to work.
Yeah, contract. Boom, they thought it was coming in. They thought they were going to have a bunch of money, and then it just didn't happen.
But also, I think a lot of times companies will start these processes and then they'll scale up.
Yes.
Yeah. In preparation of a deal that hasn't been finalized yet. And because you don't want
to. And in some business models, you have to.
Yeah. Because you don't want it to be the case that you've agreed to some big deal, which requires you to deliver something that you currently don't have the capability to deliver.
Yep.
And then as soon as the deal starts, you, you don't have the resources.
Well, especially if you have to scale, because scaling itself can take 2 or 3 months, right? Yeah, exactly. Depending on how big your scale is.
So you have to start, and then all of a sudden shit goes sideways.
Yeah, so it's all very – I think that was the interesting thing about it is I hadn't thought just how much of this has nothing to do with like willingness to give up independence and the sort of obvious initial terms of the deal, which – because in the end, it's basically like we're giving up some rights, and in return, we're getting some money, right? That's like – that's it. So it's very simple, and that question of – how much are we willing to give up for how much money? Like that that thing was all I really had ever thought about, which previously was like, I'm not willing to give up anything, you know?
Yep.
And then we changed that. And now it was just, that was the question. But then it turned out that all of the details are actually very interesting and complicated for how that actually happens. Yeah. So it was neat.
Yeah.
And I honestly enjoyed it. I mean, it was kind of annoying to like look over the contract again and again. But it was also kind of fun.
It's fun to put
it was a fun puzzle.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing is too, there's so much technology now that actually shows you how it has changed, you know, in the sense that like, instead of having to reread the whole thing again, you can look for the spots that have changed. That is nice. That's a nice new thing that didn't used to exist.
It must have sucked a lot more to be a lawyer.
Yeah, because of course, back in the day, somebody could just like sneak in. They could sneak a thing in.
And to reread every single
just reread everything over and over again. No thanks. And also on the subscription front. Okay, so Apple Arcade announced last week, I think.
Yeah.
And they're starting on September 19th, which is the day after this podcast episode airs. Apple Arcade is Apple's $5 a month subscription. I think they're starting with 100 games.
Something like that.
I think it's over 100.
They're launching to 100 within the first couple months, I think.
Okay, so
there's some weird framing
something
around it,
about 100 games.
Yeah. I think they wanted to be able to put the number 100 on there, and they just like used some words to make that work.
Yeah, and so my understanding of Apple Arcade is this is very clearly aimed at families and parents to basically say, here's the thing. We have a huge selection of games that have been vetted and curated by us.
By human beings.
As being family friendly. They don't have in-app purchases. They don't have ads. They
don't have to worry about privacy issues.
You don't have to worry about privacy issues because we're being very strict about all that stuff. And so for $5 a month, you now have the ability with peace of mind to just hand your kid the iPad and they'll leave you alone. So like my understanding is like they're not selling the games so much as the peace of mind of a parent – of a tool for parents to like – be able to placate.
You can see this in the games they have too, right? Because part of the model was to only have brand new titles.
Yeah.
Right. And so you can't sell the – it's hard as shit to sell a game, right?
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
basically – you can't unless people already know that that game exists. So that's very clearly what they're doing. Now, also, the price point, I was surprised at how low it is.
Same here.
Yeah, it's half of Netflix.
It's very cheap.
Lower than half.
Third
of them. Yeah, which also then kind of makes sense like why they have no AAA titles in there, right? Because the – And you know, Apple has talked fairly publicly about they're putting a lot of resources into this. I don't think they've given out any numbers or anything, but they're putting a lot of resources in this anyway. And from our understanding, they've treated devs very well who are putting games in there. But the moment you bring in a AAA title, like everything gets 100
bucks. It absorbs all the resources.
It absorbs all the resources.
Yeah, also,
if you're charging $5 a month, you know, they're going to have a huge user base, and they're going to get plenty of money coming in.
My
question is always the scale. Once you hit AAA, like what is that?
My assumption is that it will do well. Apple's trying to move into this more of the services model with this thing. And I think the reality of just how many games are on there and then the fact that they spread across your devices.
Yeah.
The whole thing. I think it'll do something for sure.
Yeah. And of course the fact that Apple, they've got all the iPhones in the world under their command, so they can just put the arcade somewhere front and center on your iPhone.
Yeah, which I assume they're doing with the updated OS.
Yeah. So, I mean, they own the entire chain, right? They own the hardware. They own the operating system. They own the store. They own the software. They own the arcade. So, I mean, if they can't make this go, then I don't fucking know. I don't know who could.
At this price point.
We'll be watching from the sidelines.
Yeah. So, really, I think it's – I don't think there's a question of whether it will succeed. I think it's more of a – just what the degree is going to look like. Yeah. And also
– there's good stuff in there too.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's stuff that we've seen. There's a stuff that people –
Sneaky Sasquatch is
that,
in there.
Is that announced though for that?
Yeah. They have a big trailer up on it.
Okay, good. Yep. I wanted to be able to say them by name, but I didn't know if they actually announced it or not.
It's the Rec 7 team.
Yeah.
Some of our favorite people.
Yeah, we have been plugging Sneaky Sasquatch on this podcast for years, actually.
Yeah. We've only seen it a few times at PAX.
Yes. So and every time we're just like, this is crazy.
Yeah. But this is actually one of the cool things that some, you know, going back to this idea of, you know, giving up some of your freedom and flexibility for financial security. Mm-hmm. It lets you do stuff because like they've been working on sneaky Sasquatch for a long time, but couldn't actually see because it's a simulation, right? Like, and they couldn't figure out how they were going to sell this. How do you pitch it? How do you get anybody to, and they found themselves in a position where they had to pitch it to a service, right? Where the service, like, it's all about having just a fun array of interesting, diverse stuff, right? And so the pitch that they had to have was very different than trying to pitch it directly to a player. And they could basically say, hey, we've just got this really weird, fun thing. Mm-hmm. And we want to finish it and put it on this platform. And now you actually get to, right? Because you've been kind of freed up from the requirement that the thing – that you can sell this directly to players, right? So there's actually a huge
– it's going to be shown to players.
Yeah.
So probably – hundreds of millions.
Yes.
Of
them. And so when it comes to this idea of independence, right, it's like, okay, so, you know, Apple Arcade has made it clear that it's an exclusives focused mm-hmm. platform, right? And so that means that they can't put this game on other platforms, right? And so that was the thing that they gave up. But in return, they got this enormous amount of independence, actually, mm-hmm. because they got to make the game they wanted to make that otherwise might not have been viable.
Yeah. So at a certain point, you got to just take what you can.
Pick and
choose. You know?
Yeah. Well, this is that nuanced view of maximizing independence because it's one of our, you know, it's mm-hmm. on our bullet list of principles. And the nuanced view is you have to understand what does independence mean, because it has a lot of dimensions to it.
Well, part of it is being alive.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, if your studio collapses because you refuse every business deal, then you're not very independent because you don't exist anymore. Yep. So there's there's nuance. And then the last subscription news is Discord Nitro.
Which has been around for
1 year.
1 year?
Okay. They're coming up on their 1 year anniversary since they launched Discord Nitro, which is the subscription service for $9.99 a month that has some pretty good number of games. And anybody on Discord can, and also Discord Nitro, if you subscribe, also has perks for the chat service itself. Mm-hmm. So they're shutting down the games subscription side.
And they've already, over the year, which I think I already talked about, kind of tucked the store away, because there used to be a storefront you could go buy stuff, mm-hmm. and that hasn't been there now for 6 months, I think.
Yeah. So I think it was a few years ago we had talked about the idea that it would be crazy for Discord not to put a game store into their mm-hmm. client, just because of the fact that the chat client is built around gaming as like a thing.
Yeah.
So many gamers use it for their voice stuff and all that, and if you get 200 million gamers together in one place, like, why would you not start to sell them games?
Yep.
But then, of course, at the time, the conversation was like, well, we still don't know what that would necessarily look like or how it would integrate with the client or whatever. So then they announced their subscription service, and it was just part of their normal Discord Nitro thing. And we all kind of felt at the time like we were kind of going through the list, and none of us really participated. Mm-hmm. You know,
it was weird because I was very excited about it, and I was like, "Oh, cool! This is going to be a big deal." But then, I had Nitro. I still haven't played a game.
Yeah, and I looked through a bunch of the games.
I downloaded a game and didn't play it.
But I wonder what's that about?
I don't know. I mean, I think the only game that I played was Spellforce, which is a game that we had like 20 years ago, and I was like, "Oh yeah!" So I basically just kind of like revisited a game that mm-hmm. I had already played.
I downloaded Tooth and Tail because I keep meaning to actually buy it and play it on Steam, and then just. Every time it comes up on sale again, I'm like, I'm not feeling it right now. So it's been in my wish list for like, I guess a year and a half or whatever mm-hmm. it's been now. And so when that came up in Nitro, I was like, oh, a barrier was removed. So then I went and downloaded it. But then the real barrier was just actually playing it. That was it. Yeah. And so it didn't even help that I had.
Yeah. So this is an interesting conundrum that I think is, you know, it's going to be there for all of these subscription services mm-hmm. is the problem of. A lot of people who play games really like to get into a game.
Yes.
You know, they go really deep into a game. And so offering a huge selection of games may not necessarily be a selling point for a lot of people, right?
It gives you, choice paralysis.
Right. And so in the case of Discord, I already was a Nitro subscriber because of the chat client benefits prior to all that. And so – all of a sudden, without me having to make any decisions, all of a sudden I had like 100 extra games available to me. But also I was already busy. Like I was already playing the games
got your list.
That I already was playing, you know, Rocket League and Kerbal Space Program and World of Warcraft and mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Well, and it was even sold as basically a perk to the chat features. You know,
yeah.
Like it wasn't. They didn't really try to sell you Nitro the subscription.
But I'm wondering if this is basically what the crux of the problem was, which is that the service that people are coming there for is the chat.
Yeah.
And it is, I mean, it's just like any service. Like, you know, it's basically strictly for the chat. Anything that they add on to it that's not that is going to not be the reason. Like, people aren't going to start going there for the store specifically. Yeah, I mean, they go there for the chat.
Yeah, as we've said before, you know, context is super important to people's purchasing decisions, right?
Well, it's context and just things like exclusivity. Because the fact is, you know, there were so many games that were in the Discord client that I had seen all over the place for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And I think they did have some exclusives.
They did, but their exclusive strategy was – it wasn't Epic. Because the Epic strategy was to get AAAs, right, as exclusives. And because now there are games that people want from developers they know about, and this is the only place you can get it. Therefore,
like Borderlands 3.
Now this is where you have to go, right? And Discord did what Apple is doing, which is they said, we don't want to put all of our money into AAA and get like one or two AAA titles. We want to get maybe hundreds of indie titles or whatever, right? Because you can just get a lot more of them, right? And so
– the difference being the Apple ones are all exclusive
as
far as I know.
They are.
They're all new things.
Yeah, they're all new and exclusive. Yeah. Right.
And a lot of the Discord stuff was actually, like I said, Spellforce, like 20 older games, like Roller Coaster Tycoons in there. Yeah. Like, these are all great
games. They only had a handful of exclusives. But the exclusives were, there were smaller indie titles.
Yeah.
And exclusives only work as a selling point if people know they want the thing in the first place.
Yeah, well, the point of the exclusive is that the exclusive brings the audience that's attached to the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it has to be already a successful thing, basically. Right?
People
so,
have to want this.
Yeah. So Borderlands 3 is like a fantastic exclusive get from Epic, right? Because it's got this huge fan base that's super excited about it. So by being on the store, they're going to bring that fan base over, right?
Right.
So yeah, if you don't – getting an exclusive for a smaller indie title is never going to be quite as good of a deal.
Yeah, and this is why you also see with Apple Arcade, they're not selling the games in the store, actually, right?
Correct.
They're selling the service.
It's a service. Yeah.
And what the service gives you, which is this family-friendly –
yeah, and that's the smart approach.
Yeah, it was the approach you have to take because the fact that things are exclusive in there, it doesn't matter to people. People don't care if things are exclusive when they haven't heard of them,
right?
You know?
Yeah. And so I don't know what's happening with the Discord paid store because it was actually – there were two parts to the Discord store. There's the Nitro where you're a subscriber and you get all these games. And then also they had a separate section where you could just buy games.
They're putting – that's all now inside of the channels, inside of the servers.
So now it's the case that if I want to buy Descenders through Discord, I have to actually join the Descenders Discord server.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the top left corner, there's a link where I can buy it through Discord.
Right.
Which is weird because I wouldn't really join the Discord server unless I was already playing the game.
Yeah.
So – that, I imagine, is not going super well either, just based on my intuition. But
who knows? Yeah, my impression is that basically the infrastructure was there. And so they wanted to still – because you can also use it for doing like alpha and beta testing and that kind of thing. So my impression of it is that they're basically providing as a service to developers.
Yeah.
And very vaguely – yeah, to basically be able to do betas and alphas and stuff and to kind of build your community and focus your community around your game so that you can also just sell directly to community, you know, through Discord right there. Because they're also like because they're taking a 10% cut, I think, or something like that is what they announced.
Yeah,
something like
low,
that.
Yeah.
So it's their cut is low enough that it's going to they're not really going to be making any money off of it either. So I'm pretty sure they're just providing it
just as a service to get the more stuff happening on the platform.
Yeah, I think that's really it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Borderlands 3.
Oh, so yeah, Borderlands 3.
You played it. Yeah. I haven't played it yet.
I my wife and I played it on Saturday night for a few hours. We played the shit out of Borderlands 2, loved it. So we're very excited about Borderlands 3. And so far, people have been saying it's just Borderlands 2 again. Mm-hmm. And that is 100% spot on.
Yeah.
It's just Borderlands 2. And for the most part, that's great.
Okay.
But there's a problem with the lore side, which is that a lot of what was so fun about Borderlands 2 was that the characters were like all new and interesting and you never knew what a weird character, because they're all weird. So you didn't know what they're going to be like, and they introduce all these kind of funny jokes and features as time goes on. But you're also kind of building up some lore, because you kind of find yourself part of this, you know, faction that's fighting against Handsome Jack, and you know, you learn who, and very slowly learn about Handsome Jack through his little audio tapes, you know. And in this one, they've actually brought basically all the old characters back. So you're playing as new Vault Hunters, but the Vault Hunters don't matter, actually, because they're not part of the story. You know,
they're just shooting everything.
They're you're just as a character. You're literally irrelevant to the story. The story's happening around you, and you're kind of participating in it. But your character isn't a core piece of the actual story, right? Hmm. So in Borderlands 2, that's true. And so So Borderlands 3, they're like, new set of Vault Hunters. You got new capabilities, and they're pretty fucking rad. So I'm playing as a character. She just has a giant mech suit she can summon and get into, and your upgrade tracks are just like adding new arms to it that shoot different kinds of weapons and stuff.
So it becomes more and more ridiculous as you go.
Yeah, so it's pretty – and you also I just added – you can add like a mount to your back so that your buddy can actually hop into the back with another turret.
What?
So it's pretty awesome. And my wife is playing –
So you are a vehicle. That's your –
And my wife is playing as a character who's the Beastmaster. So the Beastmaster is a robot. Like, it's really weirdly tall robot. So like towering over my character who can summon a handful of different – creatures. So there's like this like dog like alien, this monkey like alien that has a gun, and and this ant, this like ant lion type of enemy that, or
a monkey
or
with a gun. So a person,
right? Yeah. but then each one has a special ability. So one basically summons shields, and the other one just like attacks things, you know, whatever. So they did a good job making these new Vault Hunters just be very fun and interesting. But then once you get into the game, the first thing you do is you meet Claptrap again.
Of course.
You know? And he's basically just the same guy. And but now everything is being told as if you know who Claptrap is. So you're not being introduced to Claptrap. You know, you're just like, oh yeah, I remember Claptrap. He's really funny. Like, we hope that you still like him and find this interaction enjoyable. And it is, definitely. But then like the first characters you meet, like you do meet a few new characters, but they're now all part of a continuation of the story of Borderlands 2.
Mm.
So my wife and I both found that we just weren't paying attention to the story, actually, because like it just felt like
there's nothing new.
It's continuing, things are, but it's like, okay, we're hunting vaults again. Like, it's all the same stuff. And the story, frankly, isn't that deep in the first place, right? Because they just needed a reason for you to shoot stuff. But somehow in Borderlands 2, it just felt really fun and compelling to learn more about what was going on. And I think a lot of it was also like the Handsome Jack tapes, where it's just so hilarious. And so far, we're only a few hours in, so who knows? But so far, we just haven't felt that. It just really feels like, that end game experience where things just kind of keep on going.
Yeah,
it kind of feels like that. It kind of feels like Borderlands 2, and things are just kind of still going.
Yeah,
but it doesn't really feel like they need to be.
So it's kind of, you're in like the Matrix Reloaded kind of a situation.
Yeah.
You're like, this didn't necessarily need to happen.
Yeah, but the gameplay is super fun and satisfying, and so I have nothing bad to say about the actual gameplay experience.
It just could have used some more novelty, maybe, in the story department.
Yeah. Well, right. I think having it felt like, and I think, I don't know, that my impression is that from their past titles, they basically decided that what the fans really wanted was just literally more Borderlands 2. And I think that's largely correct. And to give it to the fans then, they just literally said, okay, more Borderlands 2. That was it. Like, same story, same everything. We'll just continue the story. And I think they still could have, but they could have taken a different angle on the same story. And it is the case that it is clearly a different story, definitely. It's just that you started off with the same characters and the same framework. It's this, and so I don't know, but the opening cinematic is pretty glorious.
Oh man, I'm so excited.
It is very fun.
Yeah, so I actually have never, I weirdly love the Borderlands games, but I've also never played any of them for more than a few hours.
You gotta play them with people.
Yeah,
it's a
multiplayer, and like they have endings and stuff, right? Like, you can beat the game.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And their expansions or DLCs, or whatever they call them, are just fantastic.
Now there's Tiny Tina's.
Tiny Tina's she's a dungeon master, basically.
Yeah,
that is still just
voiced
one
by
of my,
Ashley Birch.
Yeah,
who is hilarious.
Mm-hmm. And they did so many weird things with that expansion, because you'd be going through and the world would look a certain way, and then she would all of a sudden realize she didn't want to tell the story that way, so she would change it, and all of a sudden it's this very friendly place, and they just like kind of wipe the screen, and now it's a different environment. They just did all this really weird, cool stuff that made it feel like truly, you were playing as a character in a D&D game being told by Tiny Tina.
From their standpoint, that's the DLCs are actually where probably all the weirdness is going to really come in full force.
Yeah, I think so.
Because that's actually the place where they get to play. Because
that's where they get the freedom of doing whatever they want.
Yeah, because they know.
Then you can buy the weird thing that you want.
Well, not only that, but like all the tools and tech have already been developed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like actually where you get to really put production into a big phase and do some weird experiments and stuff.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think what they're doing is basically making another Borderlands 2, just a little better, right? Mm-hmm. But just another Borderlands 2, and they're going to give us some wacky expansions at some point.
It'll be fun.
Okay, yeah. I'll have to check that out.
Mm-hmm. It's fun, though.
And it's exclusive on the Epic Store.
Yep. There you go.
Well, I guess I'll have to go there and get it.
The Epic Store added pre-downloads, just for this game.
So do you think the Epic Store has those now, or did they just kind of cram that in by hand?
I don't know. We'll figure it out. I don't know how good their processes are over there.
Yeah. All right, let's get on to some questions. These questions come from our listeners over at podcast.beastcast.net. Highest upvoted question comes from Flyhoppy Axe Rompa. Do any of you ever read and skim through the entire list of podcast questions? If so, do you ever see a question that you secretly hope doesn't get upvoted?
Yes.
Was it one
yes.
of mine?
Oh, no. I don't think it's one of yours. I don't know.
For that third one, Flyhoppy does ask depressing questions.
That's true.
I'm going to go ahead and just say yes across the board.
Yeah. Sometimes you're like, do we want to go there today? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, we do have. We do have.
Sometimes it gets too real.
It's too real. We do have a no bummers policy, which isn't to say we can't talk about things that are on the darker end of the spectrum.
Right.
It's just that that shouldn't be what it's about.
We don't want to sustain that forever.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I'll just say because these are all public, because Flyhoppy has asked these questions in a public forum. So I will say the ones that we have not answered were the ones where he basically told a sad story and then asked a question that was only tangentially related to
that. Yeah, so you gotta really tie it. You gotta tie it together.
Or even then, just, you know, there needs to be a real reason for the sad story and then also thing that could be positive about the outcome of the question. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, yeah, I don't tend to look through the questions because I kind of want to be more surprised by them when they come up.
Yeah.
So I
very rarely do. The ones that are the weirdest to me that I don't like the most are the ones where they're like, okay, the three of you are trapped on an island. Who do you eat first? Or like, or which one of the three of you do you just hate? Like all these things where it's just like for some reason trying to create animosity. And I'm like, dude, what?
Yeah, we got all that out of our system in our first 20 years of life.
Yeah. And so otherwise, good. the ones that I also just – it's not that I secretly don't want to have. It's just the ones that I wouldn't upvote and would not really answer are the ones that are basically just completely random, you know, where there's like – it's just some like random words in effect. Then those ones I'm not.
Yeah, because
there's no meat there.
Yeah, you have to ask the question, what sort of value can we bring to the podcast via this question?
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? The question is a vehicle.
Now, speaking of meat – next question comes from Chelosis. Nice. What do you guys eat for lunch normally?
Nice segue.
meat.
Yeah. What have you guys been having?
I just eat whatever's around.
Adam grabs a single peanut.
Yep. Yeah. I eat handfuls of peanuts throughout the day. That's my baseline. Staying healthy, keeping my blood sugar static kind of thing. Because I was actually talking to my wife about this weekend. So we talked probably in the podcast before about this idea that if you're doing work, it's like you're always excited about having done work, you know, and it feels really good to have done work. But sometimes in the moment to moment, it's not so great. For me, eating is exactly the opposite, which is eating is great. I love to eat, but I fucking hate having eaten.
The feeling of you're like, full and weird.
Full. And also because I got weird guts too, you know, so there's literally nothing that I can eat in my life, unless I eat a tiny amount of it, that I feel good after eating. Like I'm just always feel worse after I've eaten something. And so
if you maintain a small amount.
Yeah, if I just like have a small amount of just like some protein and fat just throughout the day, and like protein, fat, and salt, which is, you know, some like really good salted peanuts, and just kind of eat that, then I just feel fine the whole time.
You know those Camelback pouches with the little tube thing?
Yeah.
You need one of those full of peanuts.
Or a Pez dispenser.
Yeah.
That's a
where you can just kind of lean over and kind of like –
we should get is one of those relish pumps from the baseball.
Oh, so yeah.
Get a
put one of those on top of your monitor. Okay. Yep,
get a
and then
pump.
Anytime you're feeling snacky, you just reach up and blast it.
Sometimes nothing will come out except for dust. And then other times it'll be like just an avalanche.
And you get flavor blasted.
Pickle blast.
I do. I've actually been doing salads lately. Salads and hard boiled eggs. I have four hard boiled eggs and some salad.
How do you feel about hard boiled egg yolks?
I'm fine with them.
Okay.
I eat meat, and you can get these bags of like steamed veggies at the grocery store, like and they've got like a trillion different ones.
And it's like a pound or some crazy thing. You just throw it in the microwave.
It's so
right?
fucking good. There's a huge variety of them too.
They self-steam in the bag. Is that the ones?
Yeah. Oh man, so good. You get yourself a complete meal just with that. Well, not just with the vegetables, but you know, mix something else
put
in there.
Put some beans in there.
You need some proteins. But next question comes from Gua. I like analyzing the game market and trying to figure out the reason why some games succeed and some fail.
Good luck.
Yeah.
I'm constantly seeing unexpected successes and failures.
Yes. And if you've seen anything else, then I'd be surprised.
And even big companies often can't make good predictions.
Correct. Yep.
So my question is, do you think that there's a value in analyzing successes and failures with their games? or maybe developers should just accept the fact that we're making art and it's impossible to predict what will resonate with large numbers of people.
I have a yes and no on both of this.
Yeah.
I got a middling feeling.
I think if you're trying to look at what worked for other games and as a metric of what you should do,
I don't think that'll work because
everything is context and time dependent, yep. Right? So we sometimes joke about how anytime you hear about something at GDC, you're hearing it 3 years too late.
Yes.
Because it takes somebody years to build something. They had the idea that was relevant at the time they started building it. Mm-hmm. They finished building it. Then it has to become successful enough that they can submit a talk to GDC.
At the appropriate time.
At the appropriate time.
Happens August, and then September.
6 months after that, GDC happens, right?
Yep.
And by that point, it's probably useless.
Yep. Well, and then everything's riddled with attribution errors because, well, it may be reasonable to think, hey, I did this. Hey, I spent $50,000 in ads. Hey, this YouTuber picked me up. Hey, whatever, right? That's the reason and then I was successful, right? Yep. And it's really easy to link those two things together, but there's no way to actually prove that. And so you have attribution errors, and you combine that with, or I guess attribution unknowns, but what you're going to see is attribution errors, because people will attribute things. They always will attribute things, and there's going to be a wrong some unknown fraction of the time. So you just have to kind of assume those are all wrong, and then you couple that with survivorship bias, and you now basically just have no idea why a thing.
Well, there's also this other problem, which is, like, say you do a market analysis, which you're supposed to do, supposedly, before you start making a game. It's a really weird problem because demographically, if you're looking at like the total proportion of the player base, like what sort of games do they play? There's plenty of data around that shows, like, basically genre-wise, what people are playing. So you could say, oh, well, we need to make something that everyone's playing, right? Mm-hmm. But you could also equally say, oh, we need to make something that's not even on this chart yet, because it's a completely underserved market. So you see something like Rocket League comes out of nowhere. No one asked for that at all. Literally at all. No one was like, you know what I'm missing? Flying around a car, hitting a ball.
Yep.
Like,
well, and even better is, of course, Psyonix already made that game. And it didn't go even remotely as well as it did the second
time. So this is why, you know, frequently on the podcast, you'll hear us say, just at some point at the end of a discussion, just say, nothing matters. Right. Everything matters and nothing matters. And I think there's a benefit in it just because it builds up a broad library of stories about various methods of success that people have found or various stories about their success. But I don't think you can it's just hard to say that you could ever make a good decision based on those stories. It's more so about just knowing what levers might be available. So this is how we think about it is we know a number of the mechanisms by which people have found success or at least appear to have influenced their own success, whether it's schmoozing with the platforms and having business partners there, doing like actually participating on social media, going to GDC, like doing all these different things. We don't know how all this stuff mixes together. And in fact, probably for each individual game, it's a completely different cocktail every single time. But we know that there's these levers. And then so our goal is basically to, when it comes to a launch point, pull all the levers that we know exist. And that's why we pay attention to the stories, because sometimes we learn something new about a lever.
But also we have finite resources. And so then we just have to use our own understanding of the world and how we think it works, not how we know it works, yes, right? But how we think it works in the moment, so, you know, at that time, so that we can decide how to allocate resources to all those different levers, mm-hmm, right? Because pulling a lever is not free, you know? Yep. And so to decide, you know, if you're going to do an ad spend, that might be at the cost of hiring an employee, right? Yep. Because if you're going to spend enough on ads for it to matter, it's probably equivalent to hiring a new person.
Yeah. Well, and I think another important note is adaptability is really important here.
Yep.
So I think a good example of a company that had a shitload of resources and was unable to capture success is Epic, actually, because they released a weird third-person MOBA called Paragon.
Oh, yeah.
That nobody fucking played. It looked kind of weird.
Even Gearbox. Gearbox just had Battleborn.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if anybody remembers.
Totally.
It came out last year.
Yep. Totally. Was it last
year?
Collapsed. I think
it was just last year.
Maybe Paragon got shut down. And then Epic launched this weird zombie fighting game called Fortnite. Also was an utter failure, until finally they saw the success of PUBG and they were like, wait a minute. We already have most of the things. If we just add a game mode that basically is PUBG but free, then maybe we can just try to steal their market, right?
Yep.
And so they adapted their game, which was originally a completely different concept that apparently nobody wanted and they didn't know, to something that became now this most successful game of our current era, right?
So I think there's this interesting wrinkle that comes up with all this stuff too, which is that as you see all these stories, it's tempting. Basically, the question I think you should try to answer from these is when to know when to quit and move on to something else. And to me, it's actually when you've run out of levers is actually kind of when it is.
Yeah.
Because the reality is you just don't know until you've pulled all of them just how the hell the thing's going to go. So for example, you know, while we've talked about how Levelhead's early access launch has been smaller than we had anticipated, it's not the case that we're particularly concerned yet because we have a full launch to go.
Yeah,
we have
the main platforms. Lever is the full launch.
Yeah, we have all this stuff still left to go. If it's the case that we pull all those and still not much has happened,
yep.
Then yeah, we've got to drop that and just move on with our lives, right? There's time to go. But up until then, it's actually very hard, and it's a battle you have to fight, you know, mentally, basically internally as a dev, is to not read. You want to read so much into any of the statistics that you're able to get back on your game, but it's hard to recognize that maybe you shouldn't until you've managed to pull a bunch of these up.
And I would say it's fair to surmise that almost all game developers believe that their game has the capacity to succeed.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I do think there's a small subset of people who don't necessarily believe that and just kind of secretly hope that it will in spite of it, in spite of them not even trying to market it or whatever, right? There's that self-handicapping layer. But I would say for the most part, people make games that they themselves are passionate about making and that they also believe that there's somebody else out there who's going to feel the same way. So but only a few games can go.
Yes.
And so it's very hard to tell. And also because of the context, because of the competition, mm-hmm. It may be the case that one particular game does really well just because of timing. Maybe so like back in the day, we worked on this endless runner called One Epic Night.
Yeah.
We were trying to launch
with
a different studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was before Butterscotch days. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Temple Run was a big thing. It was one of the first sort of like popular 3D games on the iPhone and on Android. And so the company we were a part of was trying to sort of capitalize on this new genre of game that was coming to be. And we just kind of missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we missed the window.
Well, there's this other game that came out just shortly before.
A week before.
Subway Surfers.
Which
you may have heard of because it's had like a billion fucking downloads.
Subway Surfers, I believe, is the top grossing game on iOS.
It's ridiculous.
Really?
It's doing very well still.
It makes a – I believe it's had over a billion downloads.
Yeah.
Over Candy Crush?
I think it's actually
over Candy Crush. I think it is. Yeah. We'll need to fact check this. But regardless,
Subway Surfers has been up there.
Doing insane numbers and has been for like a decade almost. I guess like 8 years or something.
Yeah.
And so like our game came out like a week after that or something like that. And also like right around that time, like 10 other Endless Runners launched in the same week and then like 20 the next week. And so we just kind of like hit right in the middle of that wave. And what we don't know is and actually I remember so many of the reviews and you can you can look them up. So many of the reviews about the game were basically, oh, great, another Endless Runner. And they actually didn't really talk about the substance of the game itself because they were just tired of Endless Runners all of a sudden.
Yep.
And so we don't know if we had launched it a month before or 2 months before, if we had managed to catch that wave, had people just been really excited about it.
Even like because Subway Surfers didn't necessarily do – they didn't do shockingly well right out of the gate is the truth.
No, it was – again, people were like, oh, this is a cool –
but they worked on it for a decade now. So there's also always that question, which is like, well, what if you just keep on growing?
Yeah.
And you just keep on, you know.
And you don't know whether that's going to work.
Yeah.
I think that that idle miner tycoon game is kind of another weird one, which is like
– yeah.
They just did weekly patches on the thing until they were making money.
Yeah.
And then they just kept going and kept adding stuff.
And they scaled out their studio.
And they had like 80 people in two offices across two countries.
Which is hard to advise, right, as a strategy because I think that's not going to work most of the time.
Right. Where it's like, it's like, do you have a game that you believe in but nobody's playing and it's not making any money? Just keep going.
Yeah, keep investing in it.
Because that's not going to work for –
almost anybody, yeah.
But the thing is, you hear these stories of when it did work, and now it makes you ask the question, like, is that what I should do?
The question is, what portion of the time did it not work?
Yep.
And did you not hear about that? Because that's also very true. And the thing is, this is the problem, is that but probably none way of more
is,
often.
Yeah. But also, none of this is actionable, right?
Well,
because if it didn't work for 10,000 people, that's fine, because every single game operates in a completely different context, right? It's like we just said, you know, like you could launch 50 Endless Runners in a month, And the first one becomes successful, or the ninth one, or something. Yep. And you, like, by the time you get to the last one, yeah, people are just sick of endless runners, but maybe that one will be successful anyway, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep. Yeah, so I think the reality is to some degree, you have to recognize that when you're reading about these things, you've just adopted a different form of entertainment for yourself, which is that it's kind of like reading the news, right? Mm-hmm. Which is that you can't do anything about nearly everything you read about, and most of it doesn't matter to you on any sort of level whatsoever. But for some reason, it's interesting. It's captured your curiosity.
Maybe you can think about it like placing bets on a horse race or something, mm-hmm. which is like nobody actually knows who's going to win. Mm-hmm. If they did, there'd be no point. There would be no gambling around it, right? Mm-hmm. But that's why it's gambling, because it's the outcomes are totally unpredictable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. There's no way to know.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
All right, well, that's all the time we have for this week. So.
Everything matters and nothing matters.
I don't know.
Well, some things matter, but we don't know what they are.
Yep.
So,
so just do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make the thing that you believe has the ability to be successful and pull the levers that you can. Mm-hmm. And
that's about all you can
hopefully
do.
It pans out. And also as a word of wisdom, okay. In EVE Online, there's a phrase that players always say, which is don't fly something you can't afford to lose.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
So you save up all your ISK. That's interstellar currency. You save up all your ISK and you buy the biggest ship that you can afford, and you've got no money left, right? You undock that thing, you start from, boom, it blows up. Somebody destroys it. Now what do you got?
Nothing.
You got nothing, right? So instead, spend like a third of your money on that ship. That way you blow it up, boom, you just go pick up another one. You learn something and now you can go on and fly it better next time, right? So don't fly something you can't afford to lose.
Nice.
All right. Well, we'd like to thank our producers, Fat Bard and Jen Koster, for making our podcast sound good and run smoothly. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord running. To get more involved in the Butterscotch community, go to podcast.bscotch.net. We got links to everything there. And, of course, go to meet.bscotch.net to get your tickets for Shenanicon. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.